Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Muliwa Gavaza, and for today, it is a Friday, the 11th of December, and you know, it's been quite a tumultuous 2020, and today actually marks our 166th episode and our last episode for the year. And to help us to close out the year, we're joined by someone who is no stranger to this show. We are joined by Sifiso Skenjana, who is the chief economist at IQ Business. Sifiso, greetings to you.
Good morning, and good evening, and good afternoon.
No, thank you so much for being with us for today. I think before we reflect on, you know, the year that's been, perhaps we can maybe get into some of the, you know, recent data that's come out in terms of the economy. You know, we understand that third quarter GDP figures recently came out. How are we looking?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the economy is certainly what, or the numbers at least that we're seeing, are a signal of the fact that the economy is opening up a little bit, and so there is some positive news on the back of the bounce back. We saw that you know, a non-annualized you know, recovery is about 13% for the quarter, and the reason, of course, is that we've had so much noise happening from a statistical point of view that looking at annualization or annualized numbers here can be you know, distracting to the broader picture, and that's why we can look at a quarter on quarter context. However, we've got to understand two things. There is a base effect, and I said, and that's why I said that on the onset it is positive news, but we also understand that we are coming off a low base. We are still, from a real GDP point of view, 8 percentage points behind where we were a year ago. And we're also about 6 percentage points behind where we were in the first nine months of last year. And so what it's simply telling you is that we've still got a lot of erosion that's gone into the context of you know, our output as an economy. And I think also when you again look into the broader picture around growth, just so that we don't get distracted by, as I said, the bounce back that's coming through because of also the extent of the contraction we had seen. The other leading indicators, which, for example, you see, you know, household earnings, right? We've got the bank serve numbers that covers about 40% of salaries paid in the economy. And all of those numbers have been, you know, still showing incredible signs of weakness since June. I think we had seen from June about a 20%, just over 20% decline in wages paid. We saw in July going into about 31%, in August going to about 35%, and I think September was back to about 26%. And these are all the declines in wages paid. And if we know that our economy and our GDP is largely informed by household expenditure, 59.4% of our GDP is a function of household expenditure. These are all the things that are talking to you about pressure points in the economy. We saw the unemployment numbers also looking materially weak. And also when you look at some of the sector variables in terms of what's happening in accommodation, as well as food and beverage, all of those are still showing some weakness, both quarter on quarter as well as year on year. So these are all the other indicators, I think, that are necessary for us to look at when we look at GDP numbers when they do come out, just so that we've got a more complete view. And so, as I said on the onset, that I think that it is positive, but I think we must proceed with a little bit of caution as well.
You know, just talking to a number of economists, it always, one can get the sense that the first 9 months when, you know, trying to come up with the overall number for the year are the most important. And, you know, just given everything that's happened, it, you know, would seem that annual rate will sit in that, you know, 7 to 8% as guidance given by, you know, the SARB and other bodies like that. So from your point of view, because we are looking at these different quarters, you know, the government has been, you know, trying to balance public health versus the economy. Or are we really, you know, because of that low base, are we really likely to get as much of a boost from the fourth quarter, which is peak season for a number of different industries, particularly tourism, which has been decimated in 2020, and a number of businesses that are feeding into that ecosystem?
Yeah, I wouldn't be incredibly optimistic, but I think we'll certainly see some positivity coming into that season. I mean, if you saw the Black Friday numbers, again, those numbers were showing that a lot of the expenditure was done on credit. We've also seen TransUnion numbers talking about the level of delinquencies in outstanding debt. We saw that increased by 400 basis points for home loans, and I think 440 basis points for non-bank personal loans. So what that's again talking to you is the health of the household. And so going into festive season, as well as now seeing that there seems to be a resurgence in infections and some of the tourism heavy hotspots, like for example the Garden Route, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, those are now big pressure points from a hotspot point of view, and I think that's going to limit the extent to which people are going to do tourist activities as well as consume cultural goods in that time. And so while I think there will be increased activity, I think it will be muted on the back of other ancillary pressure points that are still showing that you know, the households are struggling as is, as well as then the health resurgence, the health pandemic resurgence that we're seeing.
I guess now, you know, that would be a good time, you know, based off of everything that you've just said, you know, particularly the strain on households. So now, just reflecting back on 2020, a lot of people would like to, you know, cancel the year as is, forget that it happened, you know, have calendars shifting from 2019 to 2021, and all of this. But, you know, in the reality of life, how would you, you know, I guess assess the government's response, economically at least, to this crisis that no one, you know, even expected would happen?
Sure. I think, I mean, it was certainly a tale of many stories, right? We had a health crisis that resulted into an economic crisis that subsequently resulted into a financial crisis. And the financial crisis is primarily on government's state of finances, and we'll get there. And so I think on the first instance, the government's response to the health crisis itself, I think it was decisive, it was quick, and again, it was capacitated by inside knowledge, as well as getting the right people into the room to be able to respond to that. And that was about saving lives, and I think we tried to get ahead of the curve to make sure that, you know, we don't get to peak infection in the context of the kind of strain that it can have. When the conversation started going towards preserving livelihoods, I think it started getting a bit tricky, because now the balancing factor needed to be the balancing factor itself is what brought the complexity. And so as government started, for example, considering things like e-commerce and what can be traded on e-commerce, I think they left an opportunity there for some of the sectors to continue to operate via online purchases, etc. I think, however, one of the things that was going to continue to exacerbate is the challenges of inequality, because most people who are in rural economy, rural communities probably won't have access to order things online. Most people in some of the locations, kasis as we call them, might also not have benefit of being able to order things online. And so, again, your strategy to reopen or to enable activity in the economy has also got to be contextualized about ensuring that it's broad-based, as well as inclusive, as well as sustainable. So I think there's some of the choices that they certainly could have made better there. I think they also missed an opportunity to create inclusive participation of people into these online big platforms. I made the example around textiles and said, you know, that was an opportunity for government to, for example, you know, collaborate with the likes of Superbulus, Takealot, and say, there's got to be minimum domestic procurement on these platforms. There's got to be an opportunity that we take advantage of to leverage the procurement process as a capacity building opportunity for small textile makers, food sellers, and beverage sellers, etc. So I think that certainly in the journey towards preserving livelihoods, I think the balance was still quite tricky for government, and I think they missed some opportunities there. But again, they were in an unenviable position, right? And so it's really hard to wholly fault them. But as I said, I think it is a story of some opportunities that were missed. And then getting then into understanding and how does that result in a financial crisis? Well, you know, when the economy can't operate, it means also organizations can't generate revenue from which government can collect taxes. And therefore, it meant that we're going to become broke pretty much as an economy, and we're going to need to figure out how to improve our sources of revenue. We've seen productive capacity in our economy declining over time. We've seen import intensity increasing, right? And that's how much imports we need just to sustain domestic demand. And so when we look at those variables around decline of productive capacity, it mimics, of course, the decline in collection and corporate income tax coming out of the SARS tax numbers. And so we've seen a declining base coming from CIT as well. And all that's saying is that the risks to South Africa continuing being financially constrained in its ability to be financially sustainable are informed largely by the fact that we've got declining productive capacity in the economy, but we still need to have spending programs that are running. And therefore, you're likely then to need to borrow your way into that expenditure. And that's why you see from a year ago, our financing costs was about 13% or 13 cents to the rand of revenue collected, and it almost doubled to, I think it's about 22 or 23 cents to the rand of revenue collections. And those are all the things that are now talking to the financial crisis that the economy finds itself in. And the only way to get out of it is to enable growth in the economy. And I think, that's the emphasis that we're going to need to put in. And when we heard the ratings agencies come out and downgrade the economy deeper into junk, number of things they cited was the extent of poverty and inequality in the economy, the little confidence that they have in our ability to grow or create output or turn the economy around quick enough, as well as the pace at which we would be able to implement these reforms that have been proposed. And so all of these things are the things that truly contextualize government's response to the year in general, in from a health point of view, economic point of view, as well as the general managing of public finances. And I think that would certainly be the summation of the year that we saw. Year of decisive leadership at times, year of missed opportunities at times, and a year of certainly losing confidence in key institutions because of some of the material pressure points from an economic growth, from a reform point of view, as well as a sustainable development point of view.
I guess the other piece of that, of that pie, because the public sector was definitely, I guess, in charge of responding, at least on a national level, to the crisis. And as you highlighted, there were a lot of factors to consider. Some successes here and there, but also the missed opportunities. But one of the things that you did touch on just now was, businesses, failing to make as much revenue, which then, feeds into lower tax revenues and then, increased, national debt, all of these issues. That corporate sector, businesses and, the like, a big part of the economy, big taxpayers at the same time, big employers. How would you say you've seen, conversations, because I'm sure you are talking to a number of corporates or businesses in your day-to-day work. How have you seen those discussions, evolve through the year? Because I think when it came on, the onset, brought with it a lot of panic, businesses, shutting down and, being forced to turn into remote working enterprises within a matter of days, weeks, but, issuing statements just around business continuity and all of these contingency plans. But now that it's somewhat in the rear view mirror and trying to work towards some type of a rebuild, how have you seen, businesses, evolving through the year to, this point of coming from panic to sort of, okay, this is what's happened, but this is where we're trying to go now?
Yeah, I think what we saw is, businesses being uncertain about the future, and so initially they just kind of put everything on hold, and everyone was just trying to understand, how deep does the world go really, and from there, it really was then, some of the organizations, some of them were faster to market in terms of kind of dipping their feet back into the water to understand, get the temperature in the room. And as the year is progressing, we're certainly starting to see them trying to adjust to what a new reality will look like in the way in which they operate. And as I said, I think businesses are not created equal in the context of the kind of pandemic that we saw. So some of the businesses whose operations were geared and designed to thrive in a digitally enabled marketplace saw record performance. And they went full gusto into the pandemic and they invested into that cycle. A lot of other organizations who maybe from an operating model point of view are not structurally designed to be able to operate in a digitally intensifying space like a restaurant, it's a little bit harder for them to operate optimally. I'm just using restaurants as an example. Or commercial property owners, etc. And there were a whole lot of pressure points that were coming. And so I think it was, from a corporate point of view, a tale of many stories where some businesses certainly had an opportunity to invest and grow into the cycle, and others did take a watch and see approach and slowly start to work into the rest of the year, a new way of working and a new way of market discovery, a new way of also responding to the revenue pressures that they're seeing. And so I think you're seeing a little bit more positivity in the way in which businesses are talking right now, and you're seeing a lot more opportunity scouting as well. And I think that's quite positive, because now that's the kind of thing that can bring back investment, in domestic-led investment from a firm's point of view. And I think those are some of the things also that are pressure points. As soon as you've got too much uncertainty, then businesses don't know how to plan the investment activity. And I think now they're starting to get a sense around what it means to operate in this environment as is, despite risks to further restrictions as they try to manage hotspots and as they come up. But I think they certainly are responding now, and we are seeing some investment planning underway, and I think that should certainly position the economy a little bit better going into year 2021.
And then as we, I guess, look to 2021, what pieces of data or information or news stories actually stuck out to you during this year, you know, as we sort of put it in the rearview mirror? If I can share, there were two things for me personally that were quite interesting. The first was, as a technology geek, it was good to, you know, just see how businesses that are digitally enabled, as you said, were able to thrive in the middle of all of this chaos, and also just the, you know, the some of the valuations that came out from some of the big US companies, you know, Apple crossing $2 trillion, right, which is, you know, in rands is just a crazy number, you know, for valuation on one company. And then the second one for me was just how, in the same way that you say that not all businesses are created equal, it seems that not all economies are created equal and not all economies are perceived equally as well. Because at the time where the government, you know, set about giving a stimulus plan for the country, 500 billion rand, etc., they had to borrow a lot of the money, whereas in the US, they simply, you know, printed the money. In the one country, that may lead to inflation, but in another country, we just continue seeing the US dollar as this reserve currency of the world. So that's what, you know, was just quite interesting to me. What stood out to you?
Sure. I mean, it was quite funny seeing how the tech geeks became the cool guys in the class for a change. You know, but for me, the number of things that stood out, and the first one, you know, is more of a social lens, and that really spoke to just how vulnerable ordinary South Africans are, and just how exposed to poverty incidents they are, and the trajectory that we've got. And when you see the youth unemployment numbers doing what they're doing, going in excess of 70%, you're seeing official unemployment numbers in the Eastern Cape, for example, going beyond 50%. I mean, it's one in two people in that province, right? And one of the conversations I was having, and I'll just use that province as an example, is that that post COVID, that province is going to be worse off than where it already is, because the health response required there would naturally cannibalize public spending and development spending. And so budgets that would have been earmarked for certain things now needs to be reallocated to make sure that it goes towards the pandemic response. And so you're already dealing with the province that is in one of the worst economic positions. And then you add the additional pressure points from a spending point of view, and redirecting that spending. Also, we know, for example, unemployment is that the younger people were generally more exposed to unemployment incidents than older people. And the very people that this virus attacks are the older people. And so if you're seeing the fatality rate coming out of the province now being the highest in the country, it means that key economic contributors are going to be out of the system. When we saw the return or the bounce out of the financial crisis, for example, about a decade ago, when output started growing, employment didn't grow as fast, as well as wages didn't grow as fast. And so what that suggests is that the human capital decay that's going to happen in the province on the back of this is going to be problematic for growth prospects for that particular province. And so it really just anchors then the extent to which we're going to see poverty incidents, inequality actually get worse. And so it's a big social risk that is contextualized by where we are right now. And I think that's one of the things that for me stood out. The other one from a business's point of view is quite interesting, is the number of delistings that we're seeing on the JSE. And often delistings I often see them as a management buyback type of strategy. And often when you see that, it means that they know that companies are undervalued, valuations are below the intrinsic values. and therefore they're seeing opportunity. So with the kind of delistings that we're seeing and many of them coming through thick and fast, I think corporates are actually seeing more opportunity in terms of capitalizing on some of the valuation declines that we've seen. And I think they see the opportunity for wealth creation there, which is really, I think, an interesting subject to observe in that particular. And I think those two would have been some of the more interesting developments that I would say that have got me quite curious.
It is certainly interesting, and one can reflect on, you know, that Eastern Cape dilemma that you highlighted. And I'm just thinking as well that, you know, with prospects being as dire as what you predict, one would, you know, logically see, I guess, an increase in migration away from that province to other provinces or other centers of economic activity in either the Western Cape, maybe KwaZulu-Natal or Gauteng, and, you know, maybe even how all of that might even strain the already fickle resources in those economic centers, especially because of what happened this year. So going forward, as we end off the discussion, you know, outlook for 2021, is it going to be the year of the recovery, or is it going to be the year of, you know, merely just fighting to get back to where we were pre-COVID?
Yeah, I'd say it's going to be the year of managing the burn, right? I think we are in still for a tough season, but I think we'll learn how to manage the burn. And so, for me, I see it as the year in which we start to really see the wood for the trees around where the true fault lines are in our economic planning, in our corporate planning, industrial plans, etc. And then that's the first part. The second part, I think, is that it will continue being an environment where there is deep opportunity for opportunity seekers. And so I think for me, I think it's going to be an innovation feasting ground. And so for corporates who spend and invest more of their time towards opportunity seeking and to drive innovation internally in the organizations, I think they're going to find big opportunity in the climate. And those are the organizations, I think, that are going to position themselves for growth. The next point of interest for 2021 is the fact that it is going to be a very politically charged year because of local elections. And so what that suggests again is that the businesses may hang on to their purses a little bit longer until they know what's happened with the election results that in essence are going to come out during the course of the year. And so I think, just to summarize, it is going to be a year of some consolidation. It's going to be a year of learning how to live with a tough reality, as well as a year where opportunity can be found for those who invest into deep seek of innovation and new ways of working.
So that's been it with us and Sifiso Skenjana, who is the chief economist at IQ Business, giving us some insight, always an insightful conversation when we chat to him, just around what happened with the third quarter GDP figures, and then just reflecting as well on how government has helped to actually respond to the country, some of the hits and some of the misses, of the government's plan, and also response to the pandemic, and also just how, you know, corporates and businesses have evolved their thinking over the year. Everything was unexpected, and them learning how to deal with the new normal, and then just reflecting on some of the big things that have happened this year. Sifiso just highlighting the fact that in certain parts of the country, the overarching theme being how vulnerable South Africans are, particularly in the poorest parts of our society, and just highlighting, the plight of a province like the Eastern Cape, and also then talking about how It will be interesting to see how these delistings in some of the companies, how a perceived loss of value and undervaluation might present an opportunity for wealth creation in some parts, depending on how things are managed on that end. But he's also just ending off on a somewhat positive note, saying that things will be hard in 2021. That is the reality, but there's likely to be opportunity for those companies and those individuals that decide to look for and invest in the new ways of working. Sifiso, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
A very fascinating discussion, always insightful when we talk to Sifiso, and just looking out into 2021, and I definitely support what he's saying, that it is going to be a hard year, but that there's likely to be opportunity. I mean, if we look back at 2020, a lot of businesses, despite all the turmoil, there were a number of businesses that did grow in South Africa and in around the world, and at the same time, there are a number of individuals that were able to rethink their lives. People have decided to move away and go and live in different places because they can now do that using remote working. A lot of businesses were birthed. A lot of business ideas came to fruition. At the same time, the amount of capital being invested into small businesses in Africa from a tech venture startup point of view has increased. So all of these things do point to a fact that there is always opportunity, and what we hope at the end of the day is that on balance, that there will be more growth than there is decline when we get into 2021. I'd like to take this moment to also just thank everyone who's been listening and supporting this podcast. I think when I joined sometime last year, it must have been in March last year, we're at about 30 episodes at the time. That's when I joined, and we're now and 166 episodes. It's been quite quite an enjoyable ride. Definitely enjoy engaging. Thank you to the people that have also supported by coming on and being part of this show and showing us some love. There's been a lot of support on social media, particularly professional channels like LinkedIn, and we just hope and continue that things like this will be going on again in 2021. We're also just committed to make sure that we keep growing and keep delivering the best business and economics content. So for myself and the Business Day Spotlight team, we thank you. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. As it is our last show for the year, I'd like to thank my amazing team, our producers, that is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Maeshemaete. I've had an incredible year, and it's been so great working with you ladies on building this platform. I've Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.